This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 23rd of May 2025. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 23rd of May 2025. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 22nd of May 2025. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: high quality plans for new properties, clubs' fears over future complaints, and developer wins battle of the balls. So we start with the first headline story.
High quality plan for new properties. A block of 5 and 4 storey flats could be built just off Winchester High Street. Plans have been submitted to the City Council to partially demolish the building to the rear of 149 and 150 High Street, currently home to CEX and Phone World, and build the large new complex, which would include ground floor shops. The applicant, PPR Chichwin, whose offices are registered in London, put in the application for the new building to include 9 flats between 50 square metres and 75 square metres, as well as 2 rental spaces. This is not the first time the company has submitted plans for the site. In 2022, it applies to build a 16-flat complex. The existing building would also have to be partially demolished. The building is in the heart of the Silver Hill Central Winchester regeneration area. PPR sets out a contemporary precedent for the construction, citing other recent projects in the city. The Winchester Cathedral Visitor Centre, while not residential, shows that even adjacent to a scheduled monument, a contemporary approach with sufficient attention to detail, form and materials can enhance the overall setting. Chesil Lodge on Chesil Street is a large development by Winchester City Council. The overall form is broken down into townhouses, which have individual geometries and height. Classical hierarchies have evolved to create a patchwork of openings. However, there is consistency in material and window proportion which tie the scheme together. Kingsgate Street for Winchester College takes a more historical approach, using classical hierarchies, massing and proportions. The scheme is undoubtedly a high quality build. However, the artificial composition of houses, which are trying to indicate a collection of buildings created over time, is close to pastiche. It also describes some of the qualities of the proposed buildings: shop front openings with stall risers and space for signage. It is anticipated that a tenant would wish to put their own stamp on these spaces as part of a fit-out. Upper floors are presented as brick-clad, gable-ended townhouses, creating a repeating rhythm across the facade. Window proportions are derived from the proportion of the high street, with more contemporary influences.
Clubs' fears over future complaints. A paddle club, now that's paddle, P-A-D-E-L, and paddle is a racket sport similar to tennis, which people around this table have never played. A paddle club at the centre of a noise row objected to plans to build flats next to their courts by arguing that future occupants would end up complaining about them. Winchester Rackets and Fitness Club claim that residents of the 32 apartments would likely be at high risk of hearing its members play the sport. The Rackets group referred to previous issues caused by the noise and stated that whilst they sought to live harmoniously with their current neighbours, they have been subject to complaints. This was after they were served a noise abatement order following complaints from homeowners about being forced to live with a constant barrage of rallying, gunshot-like noises and swearing from players. Objecting publicly to the proposal to redevelop a care home next to them into flats, the organisation highlighted how the development is even closer to the paddle enclosures than any of the houses owned by neighbours who have complained. They urged the authority to consider the noise impact on future occupants before approving the development. Winchester Rackets and Fitness objected to the plans, which was lodged on their behalf by noise company 24 Acoustics. This stated, Winchester Rackets and Fitness has always sought to coexist harmoniously with its residential neighbours, but has received complaints about noise from the use of the paddle courts from residents residing in Berwick Close. This is a matter that WRF are taking very seriously, and they are currently in the process of investigating options and means of reducing the noise impact. The proposed development on the former nursing home site is significantly closer to the paddle courts than the existing housing on Berwick Close. It is therefore clear that if planning consent is granted, as proposed, that there will be a high risk of a significant adverse noise impact on the residents from the legitimate operation of the WRF's paddle courts. In the objection, they said development should not be granted until Winchester City Council are satisfied that the residents can coexist without causing significant adverse noise impact on the future occupants of the proposed development. The development was given the green light earlier this year by council chiefs, despite the 65 objections. Planners said that they have given full regard to the comments made by the club.
Developer wins battle of the balls. High Court backs residents after footballs land in garden. Repeatedly kicking footballs over a Winchester neighbour's fence into their garden is a nuisance, the High Court has ruled. While occasional stray balls might be annoying, repeated projection of them onto someone's property breaches common law, a judge said. The ruling came in the case of Mohammed and Marie-Anne Bakhti, who have sued Hampshire County Council after complaining about footballs landing at a rate of one every other day into their garden from the Westgate School. Mohammed and Marie-Anne Bakhti said the nuisance from an all-weather play area meant they could no longer use their swimming pool and were forced to cancel their annual summer party. Mrs. Bakhti claimed that the neighbouring sports pitch had overtaken my life, while Mr. Bakhti insisted the school deliberately built it to upset them. They sought an injunction prohibiting the use of the £36,000 play area. Judge Philip Glenn at the High Court in Southampton ruled that footballs were creating a nuisance. However, while he awarded them £1,000 in damages, he said that the Bakhtis had ultimately lost perspective and had become over-invested in their belief that they are victims of a wrong. The court heard that Mr. and Mrs. Bakhti moved into their home in Links Road Full Flood in 1994. Soon after the play area opened, the couple complained about the noise and footballs entering their garden. The school initially set up a meeting with the Bakhtis, but it was said that this was not a success. The couple sought legal advice and a letter was sent to the school, In light of this, the institution put mitigations in place in July of 2022. This included the installation of a net over the top of the pitch to prevent balls going astray and to restrict its use to the school day until 4:15 p.m. Despite this, the couple issued a High Court claim against the County Council in October of that year, alleging that the noise and escape of footballs amounted to a common law nuisance. Mrs. Bakhti told the judge that while she was once a keen gardener, the outdoor space is now a no-go area due to shouting, whistling and the noise of balls hitting the weld mesh fencing. The homeowner denied exaggerating the impact on her and said that the horrendous noise caused by the all-weather pitch has having overtaken my life. Mr. Bakhti said that he and his wife have completely lost the enjoyment of their home. The judge said that when he visited the house, some 20 footballs lined the flower beds of the Bakhti's garden. Lawyers representing the council argued the all-weather pitch was a valuable facility for both the school and wider community. They said the evidence offered by the couple was the product of undue sensitivity and exaggeration. In the round, I am satisfied that the noise from the school amounts to a substantial, in the sense of not being trivial or transient, interference with the ordinary user by the Bakhtis. I am also satisfied that the substantial number of balls crossing the boundary fence prior to the 2022 mitigations falls into the same category, said the judge. But, he said, I fear, however, that they have become sensitised by the noise from the school in a way which has caused them to become over-invested in their belief that they are victims of a wrong. In short, they have lost perspective. The couple declined to comment. The council has been asked to comment.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Beaumont, David Keith Beaumont, on the 6th of May, aged 81. Bradley Roke, Joy Rosemary Bradley Roke, on the 12th of April, aged 91. Chaffee, Simon Paul Chaffee, at Winchester Hospice, on the 8th of May, aged 46. Schimmel, Antoni Robert Schimmel, on the 28th of April, aged 69. Hack, Winifred Hack, at home on the 4th of May, aged 94. Satterthwaite, Pauline Satterthwaite, on the 4th of May, aged 86. And now we have Christian comment.
And Christian comment is headed A Quiet Revival in Religious Faith, and it's by Nigel Hemming. At our recent Easter Sunday celebration, something happened that felt a little bit out of the ordinary, but seems in line with reports from around the nation. We often welcome visitors to our services, but it's rare that they are teenagers who are completely unknown to us. It seems that a lad from a family with no church background had unprompted just asked his mum to take him to church, simply because it was Easter. The mum remembered Winchester Vineyard from attending a toddler group here more than a decade ago, so she brought him and his friend, and by all accounts, they loved it. As well as lively worship, talk and craft activities, they heard one of our teenage boys share his own story of what God was doing in his life. And they even came down to the water meadows with us to see him baptized in the river. Another local minister told me about a teenage girl who'd recently seen some information about Jesus on social media, out of the blue, and then stood transfixed at her bedroom window one Sunday morning, listening to the worship from the church over the road. The following week, she took her parents to the service, and in the subsequent months, both she and her parents chose to follow Jesus and were baptized. Those are just two stories connected to me, but anecdotally, I'm hearing reports from across the UK of young adults with little or no faith background coming to church to find out more about Jesus. Last month, the Bible Society released the Quiet Revival report, describing a trend of increasing church activity and attendance across the UK. The report's co-author, Dr. Rhiannon McAllair, describes striking findings that completely reverse the widely held assumption that the Church of England and Wales is in terminal decline. She continues, there are now over 2 million more people attending church than there were 6 years ago. The report also shows an increase in the Bible reading, that the church is becoming more ethnically diverse, that the churchgoers are more likely to give to charity and report higher life satisfaction. But perhaps the most striking finding is around gender, citing that those attending church are more likely to be men, 13%, than women, 10%. And if this is true, then it provides a startling and encouraging counterpoint to the disturbing narrations around young male role models and toxic masculinity, as highlighted in recent Adolescence series. Most of the Christians I know have prayed and worked towards something like this for decades, and while I actively try to avoid hype of any kind, this is something I feel we just can't ignore. As Peter Grieg says, this is a time to dig in and pray, and to act with courage, and to share a message of hope with people who are searching for answers in a crazy world. If you want to know more about Jesus, why not check out a church near you? And that is from Nigel Hemming, who is senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, that's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got 9 letters today on a variety of subjects, and we'll start off with the first one,
which is entitled Pit Wit, and it's from Ted Hart. I recently drove past the sign by Pit Village that proclaims Winchester twinned with Laon, France, and Giessen of Germany. I strongly feel this should now be changed to Winchester twinned with road closed. Whilst mentioning Pitt, I would like to ask Rupert a question. Last week's Chronicle letters. Have you ever driven a modern car at 10 miles per hour? It's known as stalling. That's from Ted Hart, Maytree Close, Badger Farm.
And this wonderfully short letter is from Stephen Piercy from Easton, and it's entitled EU Deal. The leader of the opposition complains that the government's EU deal is taking the country backwards. What better commendation could it possibly receive? And that letter was from Stephen Piercy in Easton Winchester.
And this. And this much longer letter from Alison Vasp is entitled VE Day Thoughts. During the VE Day celebrations, I remembered a childhood holiday in Italy when my father was asked, Inglese? And I saw his pleasure at the warmth with which his answer in the affirmative was greeted by fellow survivors of Hitler's war. Both my parents would have been horrified at the caricature of foreigners now being peddled. They would have been on the side of the many British people angry and deeply concerned about the plight of the vulnerable and homeless asylum seekers, and horrified at the situation in Gaza. They would also have been deeply critical of Starmer's hostility towards those unable to work, for whatever reason, and so, in his view, not contributing to a society that puts growth above any other value. There was a time when the Tories feared being known as the Nasty Party. The pleasure on the new Reform mayor's face, as she declared tents good enough for asylum seekers, and the triumphant Farage telling equality and diversity officers to find another job, show Reform have no such fears. It is clear they are enjoying threatening not just refugees seeking asylum, but also the council workers who ensure families in trouble, including the elderly, are not disadvantaged by new laws. In other words, diversity and equality officers and Labour seem to want to rival them, and Trump in policies that hurt the most vulnerable in society. None of these politicians show the heart and courage shown by those World War II British fighters and their European and Commonwealth allies. They do not inspire patriotism in me. It is the good-heartedness I see around me that does. There is community of kindness made up of ordinary British people from diverse backgrounds who support those needing food, care and a roof over their heads, whether asylum seekers or victims of the cost of living crisis. These, for me, are the people who represent the best of Britain. These people make it a country worth fighting for. And that is from Alison Vasp, Anna Valley, Andover.
Richard Grant asks, is it win-win? Do you honestly believe the Keir Starmer EU trade deal is win-win-win? I can't see it. He tells you he has now made Britain a world leader once again. Oh, come on, get real. Trump will throw a wobbly as he won't like us cozying up to the EU. India are just taking the mickey. Apart from saving Jaguar Land Rover, they don't need us. I also cannot understand anyone suggesting Nigel Farage will be our next Prime Minister. No, he won't. The problem for the Conservatives is they don't have anyone suitable to be their leader. And they are basically Brexiteers, not what all Conservatives want. Labour promised you they would do away with all the lies. No, they haven't. My message, as usual, is we need to be full members of the European Union. We were the strongest economy and the third largest member. We had influence. Indeed, we helped make the EU into what it is, a rival to the US. It is not environmentally friendly to trade with America, India and others. The EU is the other end of the Channel Tunnel, built during the Margaret Thatcher era. Whilst on Ireland, the North is right there next to the rest of the island. Northern Ireland now, I understand, can trade with us, the UK, and with the EU without too much hassle. So why can't we? That question's asked by Richard Grant from New Milton.
Helen Meach encourages us all to get together. This June, 1 million people in communities across the UK are coming together to take positive action for the environment as part of Great Big Green Week, the UK's biggest celebration of community-led action on climate and nature, taking place from the 7th to the 15th of June. From local repair cafes to litter picks, wildflower planting to energy-saving workshops, everyday people are stepping up to create a greener, fairer future. Whether in cities, towns or rural villages, people of all ages are working together to improve lives, strengthen communities and protect the places we love. You don't need to be an expert or part of a big organisation to get involved in Great Big Green Week. It's open to everyone. It's a chance to come together, share ideas and take simple practical steps that make a real difference. By joining in, we show that when we act together, we can build stronger, more connected communities and create lasting change. Visit greatbiggreenweek.com to find out how you or your community group can take part. And that letter was from Helen Meach, who's the director of the Climate Coalition.
Watercress, thanks. And this is a letter from John Cattle. I would like to thank all the committee and the many volunteers and marshals that helped us on the very busy day of Alsford's Watercress Festival on Sunday. In estimation, we could well have had between 16,000 and 18,000 people. The footfall of people attending was probably the largest I've seen in 21 years. We could not operate without the helpers and marshals on the day, and this includes many clubs, etc., of Alsford that provided the marshals for us. We were blessed with good weather, and I think everyone should be very proud of the festival and its activities. I heard many people saying how much they enjoyed the day and they'd be back next year. I would like to thank the residents of Alsford for being patient and can assure them that we do provide quite sizeable donations to various clubs around Alsford. Finally, thank you again to everyone and see you next year. And that's from John Cattle, who's the chairman of Alsford Watercress Festival.
Terry Lankford writes about tackling the spread of grey squirrels. The Invasive Species Week was 12th to the 19th of May, 12th to the 19th, and Hants and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust have highlighted the rapid spread of water primrose. Like all invasive species, they spread and overtake the indigenous species. One such species is the grey squirrel, introduced into this country in the 1800s. They have pushed out the indigenous red squirrel into places like the Isle of Wight, Brown Sea Island in Poole Harbour, and up into Scotland. Fortunately, steps are being taken to manage the number of grey squirrels. All invasive species need to be controlled. Only so blind as those that do not want to see. So writes Terry Lankford, Tormead, Hythe.
This letter is entitled Camp Memories and it's written by Francis Hitchens. Bushfield crops up from time to time, stirring memories. I walked into Bushfield on the 3rd of March 1949 to become 22117899 RFN Hitchings, JF KRRC, first of 60 National Service lads, mostly Londoners, to form two platoons, the King's Royal Rifles and the Rifle Brigade. Leaving Queen Mary's School the previous Friday, I have many memories of the 10-week training and offer a couple. I think it's worth a mention that what I heard from elsewhere, I've never heard one swear word during training from the NCOs, Sergeant Ballard and Corporals Jacobs and Lowe. We were on the assault course when Sergeant Ballard said, "When I say go, I want you to double down to the railway fence, about 75 yards, and I have a job," polishing his boots, "for the last man back." He then said, "Move!" And the other 29, complete with rifles, ran off down and back up the steep slope, arriving breathless. He'd stared through the stationary me, as drill sergeants do. What did I say? Pause. Then someone said, "When I say go, but you said move." There followed another lesson in obeying orders. Then he said, "You, me, stay there. The rest do it again. Go." On a training exercise in Hursley Park, word went around for a driver. Now, before enlisting, my uncle, a veteran desert rat, had advised me never volunteer when they asked for a driver, as the usual response is, "Motor over to the cookhouse and peel the spuds." There were no volunteers. The platoon officer, Lieutenant Gibbs, approached and said, "Hitchings, you can drive." "Yes, sir." He then said, "Can you drive that?" His car, a 1928 Crashbox Singer. Handing me the keys, he said, "Drive it around the park." Returning, he then said, "Give me your rifle and take my car back to Bushfield." This I did, receiving salutes as I parked in the officer's mess car park. Lieutenant Gibbs then led the platoon on the 10-mile bash, which had to be completed in under 2 hours for passing out. I think they did pass out. And this is from Francis Hitchings from Winchester Road in Mitchell-Dever.
A promise is kept, and this is a letter from Geoffrey Brooking. So, yet again we've seen Sir Keir Harmon, Starmer, unpick more of the Tory chaos left behind by the bitter infighting of the last government. Top of the list this week being Boris Johnson's so-called oven-ready Brexit deal and mass migration experimentation mess he left behind. Yet the past few days have yet again proved that Labour are not all about just righting Tory wrongs. Last week, Labour delivered the fastest growing economy in the G7. Introduced legislation enabling $8.3 billion of investment in energy security and good green jobs, announced plans for an extra 14,000 new prison places, and $625 million to train 60,000 young engineers, brickies, electricians, and carpenters. Promises made, promises kept. Thank you, Sir Keith Starmer. And that is from Geoffrey Brooking, Saxley Court, Havant.
That concludes the letters. And next we have Chronicle comment. That will be followed by letter from Westminster and then first person.
So this is, I beg your pardon, this is the editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle entitled "Welcome Return of Homes in City Centre." How things have changed. For many years, civic chiefs in Winchester were worried about the High Street and the lack of people living there. Over centuries, shopkeepers had literally lived above the shop. But by the late 20th century, most of the spaces above shops on the High Street had been turned into offices and storerooms. Councillors worried about the lack of residents, increasing the chances of antisocial behaviour. In the 1980s and 90s, the late councillor and mayor, Chris Pines, often used to publicly bemoan the near disappearance of High Street homes, along with coffee shops. But that's a different story. We report on this issue with plans to build a block of flats on Silver Hill, just off the High Street. The proposed development is large, with a block of 4- and 5-storey buildings. Buildings would be demolished, but the ground floor of the development would be shops. At the moment, the area is blighted by the uncertainty over Silver Hill, also known as the Central Winchester Regeneration. Plans are coming forward, but the area has seen the collapse of two major schemes over the last 15 years. The developers are of the view that whilst the area might be a bit tawdry at the moment, when Silver Hill is completed, it will be next to a development which will attract national attention and improve the area immensely. It will also see people living back in the city centre, bringing additional vibrancy back to the city centre. That can only be a good thing.
And this is the letter from Westminster, which is written by Danny Chambers, the Member of Parliament for Winchester. During Mental Health Awareness Week, I spent time with the amazing team at Winchester Youth Counselling, who work with hundreds of families every year. They're taking a youth-led approach to their work, giving young people a vital role in shaping the future of wellbeing support. Opportunities for young people to spend time outdoors, connecting with nature, all while socialising with each other, are vital for good mental health. We talked about a range of issues which impact young people's mental health, including big long-term challenges like climate change or economic uncertainty. I believe preventing issues from developing in the first place is the most cost-effective way for us to tackle the problem. So it was really interesting to discuss how tackling threats like climate change could have the additional benefit of improving our mental health. I've also been continuing on my mission to visit every state school across Winchester and the Meon Valley. I talked politics with sixth form students at Peter Simmons and just last week enjoyed a tour of Perrin's school. I was really impressed with the enthusiasm of the staff and pupils. Despite the challenges our state schools have been facing for many years, they've really been able to create a vibrant atmosphere for learning. Through many conversations with school leadership, teachers and pupils, I've been looking very closely at the impact of social media on young people's mental health and how it affects schools and learning. I've found that young people understand the issue well and appreciate the dangers social media can present. I think they want to see lawmakers work together and come up with sensible ways to help them. That's why I'm pleased we're now working on a new mental health bill in Parliament, and I'm looking forward to scrutinising this legislation. I'll be drawing on the conversations I've had with young people as we debate it further and ensure it brings meaningful improvements to the way our health services support people. I've also been focusing on my animal welfare bill, which has recently passed its committee stage, where members of various parties scrutinise the legislation. When I became an MP, one of my goals was to use my veterinary experience to do everything I could to stop animal abuse. Now, with the backing of organisations like RSPCA, the Dogs Trust and British Veterinary Association, my bill has made swift progress through Parliament. Every year there are thousands of dogs smuggled into the country. Not only do they suffer abuse, like having their ears cropped, but it also puts public health at risk, as these dogs will not have gone through the proper checks to stop diseases like rabies entering the country. I paid a visit to Battersea Dogs and Cats Home to learn more about their work and meet some of the dogs they're taking care of. Battersea often helps dogs who have endured the kinds of terrible abuse I'm fighting to stop with this bill. And it had been fantastic to have their support in getting this new law the attention it deserves. It will return to Parliament for a final vote in the Commons this summer, where I'm confident it will continue to enjoy broad support from members of all the major parties. That we're finally on the cusp of cracking down on this shows what a difference we can make when we work together and fight for change.
And this is Charitable Solutions by Khalid Aziz. Frederick's Foundation was founded in 2001 by my neighbour Paul Barry Walsh. After an early career in IBM selling computers to businesses, Paul struck out on his own and started a company which provided mirrored systems for banks so they could quickly restart their businesses if disaster struck. At that time, there were a lot of IRA bombs around in London. As Paul puts it, after 15 years slogging away, I became an overnight success. He sold out for bundles, and once he'd been through the usual responses of the suddenly rich, big houses, villas in Spain, fast cars, etc., etc., decided to do something a little more useful, putting something back into the society which had smiled so benignly on him. Thus was born Fredericks, named after a grandfather known for his philanthropy. Initially, Fredericks were making microloans to the socially disadvantaged, single mums, ex-offenders, and others who didn't have access to finance. More than 2,000 businesses have been supported, with the average loan around £8,000. Now they're focusing on supporting social enterprises. These businesses are usually the brainchildren of young people with fire in their belly. But these are not high-minded heads. Often they have, despite straightened upbringings, done well at academics. Last week was their annual celebration, showcasing some of their businesses and, more importantly, the fascinating people behind them. One such was Sharla J. Duncan and her new business, Journey. Born in South London of Jamaican heritage, Sharla Jane was one of seven siblings in a low-income family with all the expectations that come from such a background. I have over 50 cousins. Half of the family were behind bars. Sharon J. didn't do well in her early school years. Then, through a mutual love of athletics, at the age of 14, she made friends with a fellow competitor who was from a much better off family. She was thus exposed to a different world and the possibilities it offered. Her friend's mother was a maths teacher. She mentored Sharla J, who then went on to get a first in biochemistry at King's College and an MSc at Oxford. With qualifications like that, she could have secured highly paid employment and a glittering career for herself, quietly pulling up the ladder out of reach of anyone who might be following in her footsteps. Instead, in a rare insight from someone so young, it dawned on Sharla J that what had happened to her, she realised that it was the change in her environment that had made the difference. And I'm sure, although she might not admit it, her sheer grit in taking the opportunities on offer. Now Journey works with large corporates to provide mentoring to others who had similar suboptimal breaks in early life. It's a win-win for the corporates too. One in three of these mentored ends up being taken on by their mentoring company, always on the lookout for talent. Normally they wouldn't have even featured on their radar. Throughout the day, we heard similar success stories. A consultant kidney specialist who gave up his comfy NHS position to embrace AI, producing solutions to remove the roadblocks in the caring professions, such as real-time information on appointments and note-taking. In the latter case, using recordings of consultations to produce not only efficient and accurate patient notes, but a version for the patient without the impenetrable medicalese. As invited guests, we were in awe of what we heard. And then it dawned on us too. We do have problems in our society, but they're being solved by competent and driven people in the charitable section. So why is this not happening using taxpayers' billions? Lack of drive and competence? Probably both. What's clear is there's a gap between the already proven solutions developed by charitable seeded minnows and the scale needed to turn them into ocean-going whales. What to do?
There's just one announcement under what's on, and that's a concert will be given by the Wainfleet Singers, Music for a Summer's Evening, featuring a mix of madrigals, jazz and partsalt, and a medley from Les Miserables. And that will be held on the Saturday, the 28th of June. That's some time ahead, but plenty of notice to get the tickets. Saturday, the 28th of June at 7 p.m. in Chandler's Ford Methodist Church. So that's the Wainfleet Singers on the Saturday, the 28th of June in Chandler's Ford Methodist Church. Sunrise today was around 5 a.m. in the morning, and sunset will be around about 9 p.m. in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recordings you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
Tasty treats in store at City's Food Festival. Winchester is set to host a two-week celebration of local food and drink this summer. The event, called A Taste of Winchester, will run from June the 23rd to July the 6th and aims to showcase the city's vibrant culinary scene. The festival, which is in its second year, will see restaurants, cafes, pubs, retailers, producers and makers come together to offer a variety of events, tastings, special menus and local and global flavours. The event is an opportunity for people to try new foods, learn about the origins of their meals and even forage for new local ingredients. Winchester businesses are being encouraged to create unique experiences that reflect the best of the city's hospitality. The festival coincides with other major local events, including the Winchester Garden Festival, Beer and Cider Festival, and Hat Fair, highlighting Winchester as a thriving food destination. A Taste of Winchester is supported by Winchester Bid and the Visit Winchester team at Winchester City Council. Dr. Paul Spencer, Executive Director of Winchester Bid, said, "A Taste of Winchester is a celebration of community, creativity and collaboration. We are proud to support this initiative as it shines a spotlight on our vibrant hospitality sector, which has faced significant challenges in recent years. With July marking Independent Business Month, this event is also a timely reminder of the importance of supporting our local independents and producers and giving them a platform to thrive. It invites residents and visitors alike to rediscover the flavours and experiences that make Winchester a unique destination." Councillor Lucille Thompson, portfolio holder for business and culture at Winchester City Council, said, "A Taste of Winchester is a truly collaborative celebration of everything that defines our district's culinary excellence, creativity, and strong sense of community. A legacy project originally funded by Winchester City Council through the UK Government's Shared Prosperity Fund, this initiative highlights the quality and variety of our local food and drink scene and plays a valuable role in supporting businesses on our high streets. It's fantastic to see so many coming together to champion Winchester's vibrant hospitality sector and showcase all that it has to offer." The event is curated by local food champion Miranda Rocksmith and supported by a network of businesses and community partners.
The 826th Mayor of Winchester is elected. The mantle was handed over to Liberal Democrat Councillor Sudhakar Ashwal by the outgoing Mayor, Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith. Councillor Ashwal is the second member of his family to hold the title, however, since his wife, Vivian, was appointed to the post in 2021. The time during the official exchanging of the mayoral robe was filled by music and dance, with a cello sonata, classical Indian dance, and a Bollywood medley, all featuring. Hundreds were at the event at Winchester Guildhall on Wednesday, May the 14th, with local grandees such as City Council leader Martin Todd in attendance. Councillor Ashwell said, "To be elected as your mayor is not just a privilege, it is a testament to the values that we share as a whole for the future of our beloved district." Councillor Ashwell also voiced his commitment to inclusivity, diversity and social justice. During the official ceremony, he said, "I, Sudhakar Ashwell, having been elected to the office of Mayor of the City of Winchester, hereby declare that I will take the said office upon myself and will duly and faithfully fulfil the duties thereof to the best of my judgment and ability." He then signed the declaration of the acceptance of office as witnessed by the council's chief executive. He also thanked the outgoing mayor, saying that the best thanks of the council be accorded to Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith for his service to the council as mayor. Giving thanks, he added, "Thank you to my incredible family, friends and colleagues. Your support has meant the world to me." Liberal Democrat Councillor Jamie Scott was then elected to the post of Deputy Mayor of Winchester. Councillor Jackie Porter then spoke in gratitude to the retiring mayor. She said, "He's definitely looked the part in his mayoral red robes. We'll miss that. Councillor Gordon-Smith has a certain sartorial flair and always knows how to dress the part. His strong interest in history and place always came out as he celebrated events with residents." The mayoralty of Winchester is the second oldest in England after London and can be traced back to 1200, with even earlier references under the title of Provost.
Folk dancers enjoy sunshine and huge crowds for Mayfest. Dancers enjoyed sunny weather and eager crowds for the Mayfest celebrations. Hundreds of dancers from more than 30 different groups gathered in Winchester on Saturday, May the 17th to celebrate Mayfest, the city's traditional folk event. Crowds were entertained across the city with groups performing at the Buttercross and top of the High Street and the Great Hall and outside the Cathedral. Kirsten Harris from Alton Morris has been at every Mayfest since 2016. He said, "Everyone is really friendly and it's always a good crowd. Dancing is just such fun. It keeps you fit and makes you happy. It's a great thing to do with other people. It's such a good life improver. I would recommend it to everyone." Performing outside the museum were the Hobos Morris dancers, Hilary Scott, Penny Martin, Dinah Round and Jackie Button. Dinah said, "It's a lovely festival. It's quite relaxed and there's no pressure." Jackie added, "It's where the festival is too. Being able to dance in front of the cathedral is lovely. You've got all the crowds here just enjoying it. It's nice to be able to see other teams dancing as well. And quite often, this is the first dance of the season, and it's the first time you get to see other teams soaking in the sunshine." Ian Nichols, who's been dancing since 1997, and is in charge of teaching the moves to public, said the crowds have been pretty good. It's been sunny, but not too hot. The venue's a lovely place to dance, and when you've got somewhere like the cathedral, lots of people are out on the lawn anyway, so there's a bit of entertainment for them. We practice all year round as we perform in the summer, and then we practice during the winter. We're doing it 50 weeks a year. It's very sociable.
From chateau to country pub. Viewers of Channel 4 property programmes may spot familiar faces at this newly renovated Hampshire Country Pub, and that's because the previous restoration project of the Milbury's new owners, Clive and Tanith Cummings, was an abbey in France which they transformed into a luxury hotel featured on Escape to the Chateau DIY in 2018. After 17 successful years running the Michelin-starred Abbaye de la Boussière, the dynamic duo returned to the UK looking for a new project. In 2023, they found the Milbury at Beauworth near Alsford and set about transforming the run-down 17th century building. Tanith said, "We've done a Michelin-starred restaurant and hotel, so what we really wanted was a really nice pub serving really nice food, the kind of place we would go to and enjoy." Villagers are delighted to see life breathed back into the Milbury after the previous owner unsuccessfully applied to turn it into private housing. The parish council placed a community asset order on the pub, which was then put on the market. It remained there for 9 years, with potential buyers put off by its increasingly poor state. It was exactly what Clive and Tanith were looking for, in the right location to be near their grown-up children, with accommodation, character, and countryside views. Clive said, "When we came back from France, we needed a home and an income. We like to restore buildings, not buy other people's ideas. So we wanted a project. And when we walked in here, it was perfect. It ticked every box." The Grade 2 listed pub had not been refurbished since the 1980s, so it took 9 months to open. There are still many projects to complete, including restoring the old Skittle Alley, renovating the 300-foot well, which dates back 800 years, and building guest cabins on the grounds. Chef Mike Smollett's seasonal menu uses the best local ingredients, including old Winchester cheese souffle and chalk stream trout beetroot gravlax. The wine list, compiled by Clive and Tanith's daughter Georgia, offers wines from across the globe as well as those produced locally. Behind the bar, managed by Clive and Tanith's son, Lewis, local ales are on offer, with breweries including Flower Pots and Flack.
Nostalgic trip for the big occasion. Residents of a Winchester care home took a nostalgic trip on a 1940s-style steam train. The group from Colton Care's Abbott's Barton home were inspired by VE Day to travel on the Watercress line from Alsford to Alton. The stations were decorated with red, white and blue bunting, and passengers and volunteers dressed in period clothing. Edna Ruth Williams, 90, used to travel to school on the Watercress line from Alsford to Winchester. She said, "This trip has brought back so many happy memories for me, and I remember everyone celebrating the end of the war so clearly. It was a special day to be part of." The Worthy Road home also held a tea party to commemorate VE Day, giving residents a chance to share stories and memories. Several had visited Trafalgar Square in London when news broke that the war had ended.
Animal Bill gets through its next stage. Winchester MP has said clamping down on illegal puppy smugglers is the best way to stop cruel pet mutilations practices in the UK. Dr. Danny Chambers, who is also a vet, visited Battersea Dogs and Cats Home on Tuesday, May May the 13th, to discuss his animal welfare bill and to meet rescue dogs who have suffered from the abuses his bill aims to stop. His legislation, which has already sailed through its second reading in the Commons with cross-party support and is expected to pass through the committee stage this week, intends to stop pet mutilations by shutting down the import loophole. Dr. Chambers and Battersea Dogs and Cats Home are calling on MPs from across all parties to continue backing the bill and ensure it becomes law. Pet mutilations such as ear cropping and tail docking are widespread in the UK despite being illegal. The import of animals that have already had these procedures is still legal. This creates a market for mutilated animals in the UK, with animals being transported under inhumane conditions. It allows abusers of animals within the UK to claim the offences were carried out overseas, even if the illegal procedures had been carried out locally. By closing the import loophole, it will be harder to fraudulently pass off imported animals as pets travelling with their owners and help law enforcement tackle animal abuse here in the UK. Dr. Chalmers said, "As a vet, I've seen the heartbreaking consequences of ear cropping and tail docking up close."
Options as funds for hospital land agreed. Plans to build a new hospital for Basingstoke have taken a step forward after funds have been allocated to buy land for the facility, but residents remain sceptical. Land to build Basingstoke's new hospital will be bought to keep options open, despite no final decision having yet been made on the location. The development of the new hospital has a major impact on the RHCH in Winchester, excuse me, as its A&E department is set to close and maternity be downgraded once the new facility is open. Calls have been made by politicians to secure land at Junction 7 of the M3 for a new hospital after Health Secretary Wes Streeting announced in January that the Basingstoke project will be delayed until at least 2037. There were fears that the land, which has been identified as the preferred site for a new hospital, would be lost by the time plans come to fruition. Basingstoke MP Luke Murphy now announced that he had committed to securing the land needed for our new hospital, following a visit from Hospitals Minister Karen Smith on May the 8th. Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, HHFT, has since confirmed that it will purchase land at Junction 7 of the M3. The Trust consulted on possible locations for the new hospital, including at its current location in Aldermaston Road and the land at Junction 7. However, despite the consultation ending and the Trust stating that the land at Junction 7 is the preferred option for a new hospital, it said a final decision on its location has still not been made. Among those concerned that the land at Junction 7 could be lost was MP for North West Hampshire, Kit Malthouse, who said that the site is critical and suggested the government purchase it before it slips from our grasp. His calls were backed by North East Hampshire MP Alex Brewer, who said purchasing the site would be the absolute bare minimum, as people deserve better than this delay. Now, a spokesman for HHFT has said that although a final decision has not been made on the location of the new hospital, with two areas shortlisted, it's important all land consulted on remain options for a new hospital site. They added that the Trust already owns the land Basingstoke Hospital is built, therefore purchasing the land off Junction 7 would ensure the site also remains an option. If the decision is made not to build the hospital off the M3, the spokesperson said the trust will be able to sell the land. The government will provide the funds. However, the amount of funding is deemed commercially sensitive.
Big Sleep Out raises £44,000. A record-breaking Big Sleep Out has raised £44,000 for charity. Trinity Winchester's event on May the 16th saw 160 people sleep out in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral to support the charity's work with homeless and vulnerable people. The event was sponsored by Appledown Projects and featured entertainment. The sleep out was also supported by Draper Tools, Embers Bushcraft and Pitter Self Drive, with prizes donated by Blue Capers, Everyman Cinema, Be Outside Forest School and Nando's. Actress Sarah Parrish read the bedtime story, and the Mayor of Winchester, Sudhakar Ashwell, the High Sheriff of Hampshire, Sue Elton, and Simon Tufnell, DL, that's Deputy Lieutenant, judged the shelter build competition. Ms. Elton said, "There was an amazing atmosphere and some very creative buildings of shelters, but at the forefront was the need to raise money to help address homelessness." Sue McKenna, Trinity's Chief Executive, said, "We're astounded and grateful to the hundreds of people who made this a momentous event. Trinity is seeing more clients than ever, and we will be able to put these funds back into our services to help those most in need. We are focused on preventing homelessness and ending the need to sleep on the streets. This is not an experience of being homeless. We cannot imagine the reality of sleeping rough, as we will return to the comfort of our homes the following morning. We were humbled by huge fundraising efforts from our participants, and so far, the event has generated an incredible £44,000 towards our vital services. Trinity Winchester is a charity that provides support to homeless and vulnerable people in Winchester and the surrounding area."
Travellers left mess at park and ride site. Rubbish, clothing and faeces have been left after an unauthorised encampment was moved on by the police. The group pitched up at the South Winchester Park and Ride on Thursday, May the 8th. Members of the public expressed concerns that the group had taken up half the car park that is regularly used by commuters. The group were moved on by police the following morning. Photographs of the site show various rubbish bags, clothing, shoes and faces left on the floor of the car park after the group departed. A spokesperson for Winchester City Council said, "We were made aware of an unauthorised encampment at South Winchester Park and Ride, and our officer visited the site to carry out the statutory welfare assessment before serving notice to leave. Following that, police attended to move the group on with support from the county council officers. Our cleaning contractor is now in the process of arranging a clean-up of the site, and we're pleased that the site will be back and fully functional so quickly." The police said, "We were notified at around 9:20 a.m. about an unauthorised encampment at Winchester South Park and Ride car park. Officers made visits to the site and worked with the landowner to seek a resolution. Those on the site were given notice to leave by police using powers under the Section 61 of the Criminal Justice and Public Order Act 1994, and they did so by 11 a.m. on Friday the 9th of May."
Beer and Cider Festival returns in summer. The Winchester Beer and Cider Festival is set to return this summer after a successful run last year. It will be held again at the Winchester University Students' Union on Friday, June the 27th and Saturday, June the 28th. Last year, the festival was a hit, with locally brewed Saxon Bronze from Alfred's Brewery being named Beer of the Festival. The event also raised more than £1,100 for its chosen charity, Winchester Go Learning Disabilities, an independent living organisation. This year, the festival aims to serve up to 65 cask ales and 20 ciders alongside craft beers from both local and far-flung breweries. The diverse range of drinks will cater to various tastes, including American pale ales, golden beers, IPAs, traditional bitters, porters, stouts, and more exotic styles like sours and Belgian bottled beers. As part of its entertainment lineup, local indie folk band Flaxon Hill will play their acoustic and electric guitar blend on the Friday evening, whilst Saturday night will welcome the 45s, known for their energetic covers of rock and indie classics from acts such as The Beatles, Elvis Presley, Stereophonics, Oasis and Blur. The festival will also host a quiz on Saturday afternoon, with the Friday afternoon session maintaining its usual quiet slot. All days will have spaces away from the entertainment, giving attendees a chance to have a peaceful drink or catch up with friends. The event will operate 4 open sessions across both days from 11:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Tickets for a single session cost £10. You can buy these at the Hyde Tavern, the Albion and William Walker in Winchester, Belgium and Blues in Southampton, and on the festival website.
All aboard for a big celebration. A renowned bus preservation group is gearing up for a special celebration. Marking 40 years since its inception, the Friends of King Alfred Buses will commemorate the occasion on Saturday the 31st of May. The festivities held in the upper part of Cattle Market car park will feature a display of the group's fleet in a circular double amphitheatre arrangement. The event, which runs from noon to 4 p.m, is open to the public with a free shuttle bus service available to and from the Broadway. The group began with a meeting of 35 like-minded individuals in the King Alfred pub in Saxon Road, Hyde, on May the 31st, 1985, and has grown significantly over the years. It's grown to include a fleet of 16 vehicles and more than 200 members. The Friends of King Alfred Buses has become an important part of the bus enthusiast world, with its running days, especially the May event, attracting people from all over the country. Today, the group is presided over by Richard Chisnell, the grandson of founder Robert Chisnell. As part of the 40th anniversary celebrations, the group is inviting people to join in the festivities, view their buses and learn about their history from the dedicated team who work tirelessly behind the scenes. The group is also welcoming any questions from attendees, no matter how small. It is encouraging people to make donations to help continue their work.
No to Bill Amendment. A Winchester MP has voted no to Assisted Dying Bill Amendment. In parliamentary considerations on May the 16th, MPs debated the Terminally Ill Adults End of Life Bill and whether to implement the Clause 10 Amendment, which considers whether healthcare staff should be obliged to take part of the assisted dying process for patients. Dr. Danny Chambers, the MP for Winchester, has voted no to the amendment on the assisted dying bill, ensuring healthcare staff are not obliged to be involved. He previously voted yes to the second reading of the assisted dying bill in November. The assisted dying bill will allow terminally ill adults expecting to die within 6 months to seek help to end their lives. While the legislation passed its first stage in the House of Commons last November, the bill has been subject to amendments and is no longer the same. The Clause 10 amendment was put forward by the Terminally Ill Adults End of Life Bill sponsor, the Labour MP for Spen Valley, Kim Leadbeater. The original bill stated that no registered medical practitioner or other health professional would be under any obligation to help in the assisted dying process and would not be discriminated against if they did not want to assist. Under the Clause 10 amendment, this has been expanded to say that there is no obligation on anyone to assist in the process, providing protections to any staff who may be involved. MPs ran out of time to vote on other changes, so further debate and voting will continue on June the 13th.
Asian restaurant suddenly shuts. A city centre Asian restaurant has been shut down. Palm Pan Asia in the Broadway has been closed suddenly after Collect My Debt Enforcement, that's CMD, issued a notice of forfeiture on Monday, May the 19th. The notice in the business's window says, to whom it may concern, these premises have today been seized on the authority of the landlord. Notice is hereby served and forfeiture of lease effected. No unauthorized persons are permitted entry unless with the prior consent and knowledge of CMD, enforcement or the landlord managing agent. All inquiries should be made to the above office. The notice is addressed to Gandhi Winchester Limited, which operates next door. This is the second city centre business to be closed suddenly after a note of forfeiture was issued. Basil Leaf Deli in St George's Street closed on Wednesday, April the 16th. The Chronicle is making inquiries into the closure of Palm Pan Asia.
City Road back open. A city centre road has finally reopened after days of gasworks that caused traffic chaos. On Monday, May the 12th, Jury Street closed to traffic following a gas leak. At the time, a spokesperson from SGN said, "We are carrying out emergency repairs to our gas network outside the Theatre Royal on Jury Street in Winchester. Due to the location of our pipe in the centre of the road, a road closure was in place on Jury Street to allow the work to be carried out safely. Due to the closure, traffic quickly built up along St George's Street, Upper Brook Street and Friars Gate. Drivers described the traffic as utter chaos and horrendous. Buses were also subject to delays and cancellations as the work continued throughout the week. Businesses remained open, but could only be accessed on foot, with restaurants on the road claiming footfall had fallen since the works began. Winchester BID said, "While SGN carry out urgent works in Jury Street, there is a road closure, but access for pedestrians remains. Businesses are open as usual, so please show them your support." Jury Street finally reopened just after 10 a.m. on Saturday, May the 17th, 5 days after the works began.
Family-run Chippy thrilled to be hailed as the best. And there's a nice photograph of the staff holding the award. This year's fiercely contested Hampshire Fish and Chip Shop of the Year award saw some top-notch chippies on the shortlist, but ultimately only one could win. Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser readers decided that Paul's Place, fishy spelling, on the High Street in Bishopswortham is the best. Jake Cumming, who runs the Chippy with his wife Maria, said, "I'm thrilled with it, really. We'd like to say a big thank you to our staff. Without them, it wouldn't have been possible. I'm really shocked that we were even nominated, to be honest. It's great to have the support of our loyal customers and the general public. The shop's been here since 1996, and it's a family-owned business. It's actually going to be my 20th year working here this year. In fact, it was Maria's parents who founded the shop, giving Jake a job at the tender age of 19. Asked about the secret to its success, he said, "It's a mixture of everything, really, but mainly the team's work, the team's worth ethic, and to try and be the best, I think."
Right, on that splendid note, we end our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM on digital and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.